If I had somebody to teach me what I needed to know or when I aged out, I believe my life would have been totally different. We can't do it without their help. 20,000 kids age out of the foster care system each year. 20% end up homeless. 1 out of 4 will not graduate high school. Only a small percent ever get to college.
I just want to say thank you for stepping up in the community, for sure, for Texarkana, Atlanta, for making a difference.
You can always call me. You can always count on me. That is a huge part. They said love. They said love and showing them that no matter what they do, we're going to love them.
Welcome, welcome, welcome back to the Tiny Home Podcast powered by Saddlebrook, the number one tiny home podcast in the world. Yes, we're claiming that in the world, guys.
Let's go.
Hey, today we have an awesome episode because if any of you guys follow our podcast, you know it's more than about tiny homes. It's about purpose. It's about peace and profits, right? So today we have Ambrose from Hills and Valleys Refuge. Welcome, Ambrose.
Thank you for having me.
I want to touch a little bit about what Hills and Valleys does. Hills and Valleys is a refuge for Christ-centered transitional homes and program for at-risk youth. You guys seek to provide housing, education, and mentoring to youth who are leaving the state foster system but lack family, housing, and other resources.
Yes. So to get a little bit more in depth with that, Hills and Valleys Refuge is a transitional living home that we are building for foster kids that age out of the foster care system. And before they hit the streets, to give them a leg up on teaching them how to live alone, teaching them how to get a job. We'll also teach them how to a job, you know, whether it's mechanics or construction. We have a lot of people that own their own businesses that are willing to hire kids to teach them something, a trade, so that it can benefit them.
Yep. So for those who don't know what transitional housing is, because you guys are dealing with youth, not kids, not babies, but the youth, right? So what is transitional housing?
So transitional housing is an environment that grows them from the environment that they've previously been in. So foster kids in foster care, they have a certain environment, certain things that they go around. But the thing is they're still under adults. We're going to get them as an adult at 18, and then we're going to put them in a situation that grows them. So we're going to have tiny homes, and it's going to be 2 kids per home, you know. Yeah. So we're going to it teaches them how to live with a roommate, you know, teaching them how to, you know, hey, they ain't parents right there, you know, and pushes them to be more independent.
Yeah. So who is Hills and Valleys Refuge? Who are you guys, and who's behind it all?
Let me speak on that, because so I want to go back, you know, Hills and Valleys is refuge is something that started, but can you tell our audience who's in the behind the scenes as far as how did it get started?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what's the story? Tell me, let's do 2 minutes, 3 minutes. Tell me your story. Cause a lot of listeners, like for sure for donors and, you know, people that want to give to a mission, they want to be part of something.
Mm-hmm.
They want to know who's on the back end, you know, who's making sure that the money's getting put in the right places. Where did this all get started? And like, share your story too.
So who started it? It was started by Michelle and Michael Thursden. They are foster parents that live in Atlanta. And they had adopted a couple of their foster kids when they were later teens, because it's, you know, at that point, you know, kids, you know, people don't want to really adopt people. Their kids are like 15, 16. Mm-hmm. So anyway, they adopted a couple kids, and they realized that as these kids were getting closer to aging out, the fear and stuff that started to come in. And so they went around, you know, trying to find organizations and stuff to help them and figure out that there was a great deficit in mm-hmm. this area. And then the Lord laid it on their hearts to start this. So Michelle is a school teacher. She had given up her teaching position to do this full time. We have a board. I'm on the board. We have a lawyer. We have church pastors. My wife's on the board. She is a licensed social worker. So we have a great, well-rounded help and experience to draw from. When it comes to my experience and my testimony, I grew up, well, I was in foster care at 13. I aged out. And when I aged out, of course, I didn't have any family or anything like that, so I become homeless. Well, there's organizations out there to pick up homeless kids, especially foster kids, because we were searching for that family connection. So very quickly, I got into using drugs and gangs. I spent about 8 months to a year being homeless before I moved. And then, so when I moved, I had to move to a different state. I moved to Arkansas. And then when I got down here, I joined the Army. The Army gave me family and, you know, gave me support and training and stuff on how to be more mature than what I was. So I did 10 years in the Army and two tours in Afghanistan. Got injured, got blown up, and so I was medically retired. When I got out, I still didn't have much of a family or anything like that. So the thing that I loved the most, I went back into what I knew, which was drugs and gangs, and it got. I was there for about 5 years, and I got in trouble. I was facing 58 years in prison.
Wow.
And I prayed to God and asked God that if you would make it to where I wouldn't spend the rest of my life in prison, I would live for you. Whatever that was, he had to put people in my life to show me how, but I would do it. And I felt, he said, deal. And so I only did a year. I got 10 years probation out of it. I was like, all right, God's real. So I went and I started living for him what I thought that meant. And of course, hit a wall, you know. I was like, okay, maybe I don't know as much as I thought I did. But then I turned my entire life over to Christ. And ever since then, the last 4 years has been absolutely amazing. I'm very happy with the opportunity that he's given me with the Hills and Valleys. Because in my situation, with the deficit that there is, I'm the direct result of what happens. And sadly, it happens a whole lot more than people would think.
Talk about that comment on the deficit. Like, what kind of statistics are we talking? Like, the amount of foster kids that leave the, I know you got that pulled up, mm-hmm. that leave the home, like, don't have nowhere to go.
So, 20,000 kids age out of the foster care system each year. 20% end up homeless. 1 out of 4 will not graduate high school. Only a small percent ever get to college. 70% doesn't even touch the benefits offered by the state because they don't know how. 1 in 4. And the number is a whole lot higher for women when they get out. They, about 90% of the time, end up in the sex trade because that's the only way that they can make money. Or they get in a situation where men have bad motives. And so it's the deficit is we have foster care and we have state-funded programs and even private families and stuff that want to grab these kids up. But there's a huge deficit from when they turn 18 to when they get on their feet or have the tools that they need to grow something with themselves. And so that's where Hills and Valleys likes to step in and say, hey, when this is a deficit that needs to be addressed. And so we're partnering with churches and our community because we can't do it without their help. You know, everything from people to help build to people to come help mentor these mm-hmm. kids. Because, you know, if I'm honest, foster care kids have a lot more troubles and scars and stuff inside of them mm-hmm. than normal kids. So it's not going to be easy.
Walk through a little bit, like, what's the procedure? What's the procedure like when you're, like, fostering a kid, when you bring them in? What's the process? Do they have to go through an application process? Do you take just any kid in? Are you, what kind of...
So as we're starting out, there is going to be, we have limited space until we can grow, you know. We're going to have kind of a, it's like getting a grant through, you know, college, you know. So people are going to, mm-hmm. There's going to be kids apply, kids that want to do this, you know. And I say kids, it's really young adults, but there's going to be an application process and they're going to, and it's a faith-based. So this is not just something, you know. We're not equipped or we're nowhere near to try to deal with a deficit across the board. But there's going to be application process, interview process. We are partnering with Water Springs Ranch, which is they have a lot of foster kids. But as their kids age out, you know, they've approached us, and we've approached them, and saying, okay, hey, now there's a place for them to go right after that.
Yep.
So why are you so passionate about it?
Because if I had somebody to teach me what I needed to know when I graduated or when I aged out, I believe my life would have been totally different.
Mm-hmm.
And I know what I felt when I aged out and I was in a homeless shelter. All my stuff was being stolen. I had to constantly fight. I knew the loss and I knew the loneliness of what that was. And people that didn't want to take a chance on me because they said, hey, he's, you know, in a homeless shelter. There's something wrong. There must be a reason why he's there and everything. And I wasn't a bad kid. I had issues. I mean, we all do. But somebody just take that. So I'm very, very passionate about this because we can turn around so many lives and we can change so much of the bad things that happen on the seedier side of society that we don't see unless somebody sits here and says, hey, look, this is what I went through. So
that's awesome. Yeah, because my heart is in, you know, giving back. And, you know, there was last year, me and my brother, we flew to Mexico and we had, we went to, can't say too much, but we had to sign off, went to a safe house. We were helping the kids that were sex trafficked, especially at foster care. There's about 20 kids there. Then we went to another one. But it's just like, I feel like, you know, they get abandoned, you know, their parents are nowhere to be seen. And just showing, like, me being there three days did my heart so good, but seeing it from their perspective, they don't have anything. They don't have, you know, a lot of times we take it for granted what we have.
Yes.
And I went there and I'm like, you know, we've got it so good, and we can, every dollar counts. Every dollar, yes, you know, for sure in Mexico, for a dollar goes a long ways in Mexico. Yes. And, you know, me just showing up, it was like 15 of us on the team, like us driving in there. Then we played with them in the water slides and stuff. Mm-hmm. And they would run up to you and hug you and, you know, all that stuff. And it's like, man, it's like, you can do so much good if you have a heart for, you know, giving back. Because I feel like that's where the fulfillment side comes of it. And if you make, you know, because we have a lot of business owners that are on here that are looking for places to, you know, where can I help out? Because you make a lot of money, you want to help out. And I'll get back to you, Chris, on, I know you had some questions you wanted to ask him, but I wanted to just get his story on,
of course,
like who he is and what makes him passionate about, you know, giving back. Because we get so busy in our lives. I feel like, you know, the world, it's already September, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's moving fast. And I just want to say, like, I appreciate people like you that want to give it their all because you made a promise to God.
I did.
And you're going to, you know, you're going to give back to the kids, and that's going to mean so much. When you can give a kid financial literacy, how to go ask for a job, because I see so many people that don't know how to go ask for a job or go apply for a job or even go work, you know. So I just want to say thank you for stepping up in the community, for sure, for Texarkana, Atlanta, for making a difference, because one person, it counts. If it's just one person you change, it counts.
It does.
And that's where it all starts. Because I think a lot of people, they don't never start because they want to help out everyone. But it starts with helping one.
It does.
And you got to start somewhere.
My wife asked me a question. She said, why are you doing this? And I thought about it. And I told her, I said, if I help one kid to not go through what I went through, then all the pain and all of the stuff that I went through is totally worth it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it drives me. And the number one thing that I know that I needed and that these young adults need now is just love. It's just saying, hey, you're not alone. No matter what the situation you came from, you're not alone. We are here and we won't give up on you. Just as much as Christ loved us, we need to love them, and they deserve it.
And it's funny you say that, because I was just about to ask that. From your experience, these kids that you're going to accept into your transition housing, what's the biggest need? And you just answered that for us. It's love.
It is.
But you know, with taking on so many kids and the expansion that you guys are having, by the way, congrats on the 31 acres.
Yes.
Your ribbon, red awesome. Ribbon ceremony awesome. Is October 26th yes, in Atlanta, sir. Texas.
Yes.
Well, we want to thank God for that, obviously, and congrats to Hills and Valleys for that. But that's going to come with a lot more responsibility.
Yes.
Kids, transitional kids or young adults come with responsibilities.
Yes.
What does Hills and Valleys Refuge need the most right now?
So right now, now that we're closing on the land, which that was a huge part for us, we got 31 acres. now we're going to start building. We're going to use tiny homes because, you know, we don't want to build great big houses or nothing. We want to start them. So we're starting to build. So donors, people are willing to come out and, volunteer work, and being able to do electricity or, you know, drywall or clearing land. That stage is fixing to really, really ramp up. And companies that are willing to donate and to say, hey, we want to be a part of this. You know, here's what we can offer, you know. I know that, like Lowe's will donate lumber. We have, like I said, a lot of, professional, people that own their own company from HVAC to electricians to plumbers to kind of come in to, so we can be good stewards of the money that we receive. I know Church on the Rock, Texarkana just, gave us a donation, that they wanted us to use right on the housing part. And so all the donations and stuff that are given to Hills and Valleys, we want to make sure they go in the areas that the donors want them to. And then after that, we're going to start getting kids. And then the biggest thing is mentors. These kids or these young adults haven't had somebody to stick with them no matter what. You know, a lot of situations that I've seen is, you know, I'll be with her until you may not get something or you might have a little problems and then back away. We want mentors to be able to come in and say, hey, I'll take this kid under my wing and here, this is what I've learned. Teach them the things that a lot of people have learned from their parents, because that's severely lacking from a foster kid standpoint. And to have a mindset that no matter what you do, no matter if you're popular or not, that I'm going to love you and I'm going to be there for you. You can always call me. You can always count on me. That is a huge part. I know with like Michelle and Michael's foster kids, and there's another family, the DeSalles, when they got their kids, they got them in foster care, and I think they were around 17. Behavior was bad because they've been bouncing around from foster home to foster home, didn't have any concrete thing, and foster parents, God bless them, you know, it was just too much. But when the DeSalles showed them that they wasn't going to give up and they loved them, behavior changed, they adopted them, so now they're like, okay, I'm not going to just be left in the street when I'm 18 or anything, and they're growing their lives and everything, and that was the huge, I asked the DeSalles, and I say, so what's the number one thing that changes when they're in foster care to change them to where they want to get better and have a life? And they said love and showing them that no matter what they do, we're going to love them. We're going to help them. We're going to be there for them.
That's awesome. Yep. That's awesome. That really is. So when a kid comes to your program, what could they expect? What training, what process do they have to go through, or will they go through in Hills and Valleys?
So Hills and Valleys, when they first enter the program, which we're thinking it's going to be about a year-long program, because that's just kind of enough to, when they first get in for the first month, we're going to find out about them, the kids themselves, or the young adults themselves. We're going to find out what needs they have. We're going to find out where they're at and what is the biggest need for them. During that time, we're going to show them the opportunities from the state that has, like college. I think most states, the college is paid for if they're a foster kid. I know there's financial help that I believe it's in the state of Texas that once you leave foster care, if you're like going to school or something like that, they continue paying you like $500 a month to continue going through that, or if you got a job. So there's a lot of resources. So we're going to get in touch with the resources. We're also going to attack any deficits that may have happened if they're you know, not as good in reading or math or comprehension. We're gonna also attack that within the first 30 days to 3 months. We're also going to put them in counseling. We have counselors and volunteer or therapists that are going to come volunteer, because in foster care, it's a pretty traumatic experience.
Yeah.
So we can try to put a salve over what they need, but if we don't try to attack the root problem of whatever they're going through, then we're just putting a salve over it and we're not actually attacking mm-hmm. the root cause. Yeah. And then after we get that, they're going to start to move into a phase of learning how to get a job. They're in a, like I said, we have companies and stuff that are willing to hire them. So now they're going to learn, okay, what does it take to have a job, to keep a job, to excel at a job? And during that also time, they're going to start managing money. You know, when they start getting money in, we're like, okay, let's talk about a budget. You know, at that time, okay, what does it take to live alone? You know, all right, I've got to do these kind of bills and stuff. Yeah, I want that $175 pair of pants, but I need an electric bill right now.
Things you don't think about because you weren't taught.
I know from my point of view.
Things that would come naturally to us, but yeah. We've been, you know, we had parents and all that.
When I was in foster care, my biggest thing that I was, anybody could try to tell me anything, but I was like, I'm turning 18. You can't tell me nothing. I'm going to be adult. I'm going to go do what I want. I'm going to have these chains and these nice kicks and all of that. And didn't have a clue. And I know, that's why we want to get them after they age out, because they're going to have this situation in front of them. Like, look, okay, I know I want to live like a rapper, but right now I need to live, you know, I need to put my mind in how to manage money and stuff like that. So we need to get them at that time, because beforehand, like, look, I know what I was thinking. I was like, man, I'm an 18. You can't tell me nothing, you know. And I look back on it and I wish I'd smack myself. But
I mean, you mentioned that foster care is a traumatic experience.
It is.
Why is it a traumatic experience? Because a lot of us are naive to foster care. A lot of us think it's a place where you go and you get love and you get care and you get everything you need. So what is foster care really in America?
So I was in foster care in Ohio. Now, let me say this. There is great foster care families out there. I'm not saying this is 100% across the board, because it's not. But I went through 40 homes before I found one that wouldn't give up on me. 40 homes. Wow. I was
so
tortured.
You bounced around monthly.
Yes, sometimes daily, because I was tortured when I was a kid, so I had a lot of issues coming into that, and it was overloading the parents. It's not their fault. It's just I was in a really bad place, and I needed a lot of help and counseling, and so it's not their fault, but most of the homes that I've been in is, look, there's four bunk beds per room. That's maybe 8x8 or 8x10. You know, it's for money, you know. Like I said, again, I'm not saying all of them are like that, but there was times where we had enough food for a certain amount of kids, and there was more kids than what we had food for. So I fought for it. If I didn't win, I didn't eat. The biggest thing is, like I said, you said that, you know, go to foster care to get love and everything. It's not really that way, because kids pass through these foster homes so much, and they get passed around. And I know I got passed around. So if somebody said, hey, I love you, I'm like, yeah, no, you don't. You know, so we don't want to give our trust out there. We don't want to keep being hurt.
Yep.
So we turn ourselves into being very hard hearted. We act out. The mentality that we have is, look, I'm going to hurt you before you hurt me.
So I'm guessing it pissed you off when people would tell you that they love you, because you didn't think it was genuine.
It did, very much. And another thing that probably most people wouldn't understand is the end of the year towards the holidays was the most horrible time for me. And a lot of foster kids are like that, because you know, you get time off of school, you get, you know, you have all the holidays, people go with family and everything, and we're sitting there looking like, what do we do? Why can't we have families? Mm-hmm. you know, why can't I go and like, oh, hey, you know, I got a mom and dad or whatever goes on vacation or something like that. And that was the most hardest time for us.
So you said you guys are living in a home. It's not like a building where it's like government foster care. These volunteers are getting paid to foster these kids.
Yes.
So who's your guardian? Like who's, you know,
so our guardian in Ohio, it goes by counties. Okay. Some places, you know, it differs, but where I'm from, it was by counties. So my county was actually the guardian of me.
Yeah.
Or guardian of me. And so the foster parents were just kind of facilitating the living and stuff, making sure we had our needs met. We went to school, you know, if we broke a leg or something, we went to the hospital. But in my experience, I didn't have somebody I could look up to or trust and like, hey, okay, I can go to this person with this, because it was, we passed around, we went through so many homes that it's just like, okay, it's in survival mode.
Yeah. And I wanted to ask you that so people really understand the impact you guys are making. And to set up this next question, what has Hills and Valleys Refuge accomplished so far? Obviously, you guys are doing your homes. You're doing the 31 acres. Mm-hmm. So far, what has Hills and Valleys Refuge done for these kids?
So right now, we're under the 501c3 of Church on the Rock, Texarkana. We're in the process of getting our own. But right now, it's getting, now that we've got the land, we need to get the word out, share it. So we've been really heavily on letting communities and churches know that now there is this ministry that is growing that, hey, all right, that we, you know, want to be partner with all of them. So we're getting that, and there's only so much really, you know, you can do to the 501c3 kind of gets signed off on. But we are contacting other programs that have been doing this for a long time. We are gathering information. We're like, okay, we know what our vision is, what our goal is. All right. Now we're looking at the reality is, okay, what do we need to do to get there?
Yeah.
And unanimously, it's just getting people out there to know that we exist, that we're trying to do this. Because there's a lot of people that want to help and volunteer and come teach a class, you know, but didn't know. And I think communication is a huge thing that is important, especially at this stage.
Yeah. And what is Hills and Valleys' vision?
So Hills and Valleys' vision is to take kids young adults that are at risk.
Yeah.
And to give them an opportunity and a future that they can build on, instead of fighting tooth and nail from the bottom.
Yeah.
And to not only as this is in education or as in financially, but emotionally as well. Because we want them to have families. We want them to be able to be, you know, to date and date the right people. And because unfortunately there's people out there that like to prey on.
So you're fostering ages from.
So we're getting from about 18 to 21, I think, is
okay, that's the age group that you're getting.
We're really targeting.
So right when they get out of foster.
Yeah.
Yes, because they're legally an adult.
Okay.
There's a lot of programs and stuff out there that you know, have them before an adult and stuff, but there's a lot more. There's still that big time stamp of when you turn 18, they're legally an adult. So that's the big thing that we want to focus on, because we want them to choose to be there, not somewhere that they've been put.
And how did you feel when you were just about to turn 18 and you knew what was coming next? You had to leave the system. You probably didn't know what was your next step. And it's awesome that you went through that. So these young adults that are currently going through that have a chance. But how did you feel in that moment when you were about to age out?
So when I just turned 16, from 16 to 17, I had all these notions in my mind. I'm going to do this. I'm going to make this amount of money. We're going to drive this car. We're going to date this girl. You know, I'm just going to be, you know, this huge success story. And then when I turned 17, the fear really hit, because now people are telling me, well, you need to do this, you need to do that. And I was like, I don't know how to do this. And there's people that tell me, hey, I need to do this, but wouldn't show me how. And there was people that tried to teach me, But I had it in my head that, look, I'm 18, so none of this is going to matter. You know, you put me in this place to try to learn this, but in 18, I'm going to walk out and, you know, not ever look back at it again.
Yeah.
And then the more I went to 18, because I didn't have a place to go after that, I started getting scared. I started getting depressed. I started to grasp on every hope that I thought that was out there. You know, I listened to stories of people that was homeless and made something of themselves and stuff. And it just drove me deeper and deeper into depression, self-hatred, unworthiness.
Like you know? Just didn't know, like, there was no way out.
No, there wasn't. It was a wall that I was going to hit, and there was nothing I could do to avoid it.
So what was the thing that you think that changed, you know, your story? You did a couple tours in Afghanistan. You went to the military. You came back. Then you got back into drugs. Like, what's the thing that, like, was the turning point for, like, you and your, like, in your life? You know, you went through all that process. Like, how did you handle with the, you know, the self-love and, you know, loving yourself again and learning to trust other people? You're married now.
I am.
Yeah.
How did probably you, from the very long term of 2 months.
That's awesome. Congratulations.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Like, what was the turning point? Share a little bit on what's that turning point. Like, how did you turn your life around?
So when I went into the military, I found it was a family, you know, your brothers that sit next to you, and they gave me, you know, every chance. If I wanted to succeed, I succeed. So it became my family. It became my life. I was extremely good at it, and I excelled at it. But when I was hurt in Afghanistan and the PTSD was so bad that they said they couldn't good consciously give me a loaded weapon anymore, and then I was med board out of the Army. And I just lost my family. The first time in my life that somebody would give up, you know, would give me a chance and teach me the things I need to know.
You got the family. You finally got it. And then you lose it again.
I lost it. And, so when I got out or when I was, medically retired, I was in the same situation. I was like, now I'm lost. Nobody was there, you know, dealing with the VA, which I don't have a horror story with the VA, but you don't go there to really find love, you know. Dealing with the VA and stuff, it's just like I lost my entire world. And that's what, you know, I went back to what I knew, which was drugs, and I got into motorcycle gangs because that was the brotherhood. I thought that's that familyhood that, you know, I'm looking for. And I got in there and found out, turned out very quickly that it wasn't necessarily as they said it was. When I went to jail and went to prison, like I said, I prayed that prayer. And when he said deal, and I went to jail for a year or went to prison for a year. And when I got out in that prison, I was like, look, I'm going to give it my all. I don't have a backup plan. I don't have a plan B. This is it. So I put all my trust in God. Was it easy? Absolutely not. Was there people out there to try to make take advantage of me? Absolutely. But I put all my hurt and anger and depression and hopelessness, and I put it at Jesus's feet, and I said, Lord, I'm broken. Here's me. Do with me as you will. And since then, for over the last 4 years, it's been a process of me learning to not let my past traumas, you know, impact on my life. Does that mean I fixed all of it? Absolutely not. Mm-hmm. But
work in progress.
You're still continuing to grow, and you're getting your relationship with God's getting stronger and all that. I love that.
I think the lesson that I'm taking out of this is if you don't deal with these issues, it doesn't matter if you just left at 18. If you don't deal with them at 40, you will have the same issues. You will never get your life back. You will never get
100%
who you want to be. You will never be the person that God wants you to be. And what I think is so cool is that God calls us to be the salt of the earth.
Yes.
And that's what you guys are doing. You guys are seasoning areas that are bland.
Yeah.
You know?
And there was a mentor that said, you're most qualified to help the people that you used, that the person that you used to be. You're most qualified to help. It's because you know exactly where that person was. You went through that. That's awesome.
Yep. And it's so cool. Hills and Valleys are using tiny homes. Obviously, it's the space that we do. But, you know, tiny homes are versatile. I do want to tell the viewers that they are versatile.
Yes.
And you're seeing it impact a great organization like Hills and Valleys. I mean, before we close this podcast off, you know, obviously you guys need volunteers to have written down. You guys need electricians, plumbers, landscaping, drywall, trash removal, and painters.
Yes.
Obviously, you can only do that if you're local. So how can donors impact from all over America if they're watching this in Chicago, California, Washington? Mm-hmm. Tell me about the silent auction. Tell me about donations for building and materials.
So if you're not local, you know, giving donations, we'll go to like building materials and on the things that we fall short on, some of the actual building part, it will go to pay people to come and do that aspect of it. And with the silent auction, if you got a company that does something, you know, we are looking for donations of things that we can use for a silent auction. So we have a carpenter who does cabinets. You know, he's really good. So he's going to donate, you know, a certain amount of money to, you know, to go towards a project for the cabinets. We got a person who builds like gun boxes, you know, that are hidden and everything like that. Everybody likes those. But he's going to build one. He's going to donate it to us so that we can use it to help raise money for the auction.
That's awesome.
And, you know, it doesn't matter if you wash windows, you know, or you're, you know, part of a huge company. You know, anything to help, and it just all that is used to raise money for the building aspect.
Every dollar counts.
Yes, everything does.
Yep. And my last question would be, for that kid, if you're looking at your 18-year-old, 17-year-old self, because there is a lot of kids that are going through the same thing you went through, if they're looking at this podcast right now, looking at you speak, what are some final words you have for them that you wish someone would have told you?
Don't give up. There's a Lord out there that loves you more than any other person or any way you can even imagine. And to not give up. And to let him lead your life, because what he has for you is going to be more than anything you could ever dream of. And it will, and it does get better. And there is people out there that love them, may not know their names, but loves them very deeply for who they are. And just because they deserve it. Sorry. I know, and my best advice is to keep going, no matter how hard it can get at times, and how many walls and resistance that we might meet, that you can make it, you can go through it. There's people out there that care and love you, and Jesus, first and foremost, wants to change your life, and he will. Look at mine.
You are a test. There's a saying, there's a test before a testimony. And now God's using he uses us as vessels, you know, stories to, you know, takes us through seasons of, you know, everything that you've learned, now putting that to use.
Yes.
I love that. That's, you know, kids out there that don't feel like there's another option or there's not a way out. There is a way out. Thanks. And God is a loving God. He's a good, good Father.
Yes.
And he does care. And so I love that.
Yep. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Ambrose, for coming
on
our
podcast.
Thank you for Hills and Valleys Refuge for doing what they do. And thank you for your resilience. Thank you for the love and care. I can tell you're passionate about it. It was an emotional episode for sure. I mean, you have the ability to impact lives. Yep. And that's what here at Saddlebrook
it's people about. It's people like Hills and Valleys and for like you that make a difference. So I just want to say from Saddlebrook, from us, from the whole team, we love and care everything that y'all are doing, because it takes people like you to make a difference in this world.
Thank you. And it also takes people like you to get the word out, to spread to your families and friends and professional friends. And so we like, as Hills and Valleys Refuge, like to thank Saddlebrook for having us on the air and to get the word out and to have this need be met. Thank you.
Yeah. Awesome.
Well, again, Ambrose, thank you so much for coming along. So, guys, I'm going to close the podcast out. Obviously, it was a bit of a more impactful one, a more emotional one. So if you like this video, if this podcast talks to you, drop a like. If you want to share a similar experience or have any questions, drop a comment. It helps the algorithm. It helps the word get passed along. And we're going to put a link to their website if you want to check out their mission, what they do.
Or donate.
Or even donate, guys. So this was Chris, Kyler, and Ambrose from the Tiny Home Podcast, and we'll see you on the next episode. If you enjoyed this video, drop a like. If you have any questions we didn't answer, drop a comment. And guys, tune into next week's episode where we will continue to educate you about the tiny home industry.